Welcome to the Ion Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore. Tara Reid just landed in Israel with her boyfriend, the best band ever, Infected Mushroom, playing with, I don't know, a couple people I've never heard of. Can't wait for tonight.
This is how World War Z. That's like, this is like a scene from World War Z. They should actually remake World War Z with Tara Reid.
I'm into this. I think we should remake a lot of movies. Like, wouldn't Casablanca with Tara Reid be amazing? Like a modern day Casablanca?
A bridge over the River Kwai with Tara Reid.
Out of Africa would be fantastic.
RoboCop.
With Tara Reid as RoboCop.
Yes.
Willow. If we could, I mean, the CGI capabilities now, you could have Tara Reid both as Willow and Val Kilmer.
Is it stunning how much Val Kilmer has fallen off? And he's apparently like insanely happy with his life. He just owns a ranch and I think hunts things, I think is what he does.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, I every single woman I have ever been with has at some point, like in a romantic sense, has at some point had a conversation with me about how hot Val Kilmer is in Willow.
He's a good-looking guy.
And, yeah, and he was, like, a megastar, and The Saint was supposed to be, like, his breakout film, which, you know, maybe that explains a lot, but...
I love that movie. Maybe that does explain a lot.
I know you do. That helps my case here in terms of something went wrong.
That says a lot about me. It's such a throwaway line, but there's a line in the movie where he kind of gets threatened as he's, like, portraying some, I don't know, some guy that he's not. And he's like, oh, it's so early. You guys want to get some coffee or something? And I use that all the time, and nobody ever gets it.
I remember that line. I remember two things from The Saint. I remember, one, it's an attempt to push Volvo back into being cool.
Really tried hard.
And then I remember the soundtrack, which was killer.
I honestly don't even really remember the soundtrack. The movie was just
all,
so
it was
good.
It was back when it was called Electronica. And The Saint theme by Orbital was terrific. Sneaker Pimps 6 Underground is on there.
Oh, I remember the Sneaker Pimps, yeah.
The Chemical Brothers Setting Sun instrumental, which I love the Chemical Brothers with a large part of my being. Moby with Oil One. Dead Man Walking by David Bowie. Funk by Daft Punk. In the Absence of the Sun by Duncan Sheik. And then at the end, Before Today by Everything But the Girl.
That's a really good soundtrack.
It's amazing. It's really... Duran Duran's on this soundtrack.
I had Elizabeth Shue in the movie. I used to have a huge crush on her, as did, I think, anybody our age.
We need to do it next offseason. We need to do a Saint podcast.
Yeah, we're going to get Val Kilmer on. Because he's not doing anything now.
You know who is doing something?
Carmelo Anthony?
Carmelo Anthony. Well, kind of. I guess it was a couple months ago.
In a way. I guess he is. Well, he will do something.
So you wrote it up yesterday. You hopped on that story because you were like, yep, this is going to have to get gotten.
Yep. I'm learning.
You are. It's taken a while to get you to write less about Brandon Knight's pick and roll defense and more about things like LeBron's going to leave New York. So we've got the story up, and we haven't updated it because the comments aren't specified by the outlet, so you have to be kind of careful in these situations. The indications that we've gotten are this. There was a charity event in the preseason a couple days before training camp.
Yep.
Melo's there, and he says at one point, what's the phrase about free agency?
I want to be a free agent.
Want to be a free agent, which sounds like it should be a President of the United States of America song.
Sure.
We're 90s heavy today. I just got done listening to this radio station in town that plays a lot of 90s, and Semisonic came on, and so I'm in that mindset. So he says, I want to be a free agent. Apparently, according to several Knicks bloggers, including Robert Silverman, he then later at the same event said, I ain't going nowhere. And yeah. We wrote on I ain't going nowhere back when it happened. But the New York Observer held on to this story until recently, and so it sounds like a new quote. Now, it could be a new quote. You could have like reasserted the same thing to the Observer. I haven't read, so sure. I don't know. But it sounds an awful lot like he said one thing and then did the other. Now, you could say that it's possible that he said, I want to be a free agent after he said, I ain't going nowhere. Or he said the opposite, which makes for a more interesting story because basically it's he said, I want to be a free agent, and then his people were like, no, 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 you don't want to do that. That's no, 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 no. And then he corrected himself, and or not corrected himself, but adjusted and said, I ain't going nowhere, which kind of killed the story. Because when he said, I ain't going nowhere, I was basically like, all right, it's done. I'm going to leave him alone. If he says he's not leaving, that's fine.
I feel like it just makes sense. I mean, whether he wants to go somewhere or not, there is like he. This is something that we're just now kind of really getting into this mindset of the player and kind of the culture involved with it. But so many of these guys sign extensions, you know, the first two or three contracts they have, that it's, you know, extension. Not a lot of stars really get that free agency kind of situation to deal with. They don't get that experience. And that's what he said. He said, I want to be a free agent. I want experience. I want to have everyone evaluating, you know, what I do. And I think that there is like a basic human need to be like, hey, I want to be wanted, or I want to be sought after, or, you know, whatever. Like, I don't know if it's an insecurity thing or if it's just like an innate thing, but whatever it is, like, that seems to be a pretty normal deal. Anybody would want to have multiple companies or businesses or whatever looking for their, you know, bidding for their services, right? Like, that's very flattering, and it's an ego boost. And even if a guy has a huge ego, a little ego boost is not something guys are necessarily going to decline. I mean, I just think it's a normal thing. And him saying he wants to be a free agent doesn't say, hey, I'm out of here, I'm going to Charlotte. You know, like, all it says is, I want the process, I want the experience. I expect him to re-sign with the Knicks.
As Cheap Trick said, I want you to want me, right?
Exactly.
There is, in my opinion, too much of an outcry of, all this means is that it's about the CBA. It's just about the CBA because it only makes financial sense for you to become a free agent in the CBA. And that's definitely true. That's not what this is about, in my opinion. Because
I think it's a large chunk of it. I wouldn't say it's all of it.
There's a difference between saying, well, I'm going to opt out because it helps my, you know, I'm going to opt out because that's what's best for me. That's what we've decided is the best move for me is for me to go ahead and opt out and become a free agent versus I want to be a free agent.
Well, I don't know that there's like this mutual exclusivity with those, you know. I think that like, I think they can pretty much be one after the other, right?
I do feel like there's a difference between I'm going to opt out so that I can get the deal that I want, and I'm going to opt out because I want to see what's out there. And this is a very big determination, and this does matter because I think he's going to re-sign with New York because the Lakers are not going to give him the keys to the kingdom. They don't do that for anybody. They didn't give Kobe doesn't have the keys to the kingdom. They're going to build him a statue, and yet the Lakers are always going to say the team and the organization and the family comes first. That's been their position the entire time, whether it's Magic Johnson, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Shaquille O'Neal, whoever, that's their position. They have maintained authority over that franchise. Magic Johnson is as close as it gets to having some sort of influence over the organization, and even they've done tons of things in the last year that he's disagreed with.
Right.
So Melo's not going to be given the keys to the kingdom versus the Knicks, who are basically like – to me it honestly seemed like when he came in – like as soon as he came in, they started asking him things like, so do you like the drapes? Because we'll take them out, right? I'll set them on fire right now. Do you want to set the fire? Is the coffee good? No? Okay, I'll throw it out the window. Like they'll do whatever for him. They've put guys from CAA in charge. Former Nuggets executives are in the front office. Everything has been built around Melo is our star, Melo is the idol, and we talked about this a lot. I think this is a terrible way to run a franchise because I think you have to have structure and discipline. I think that's been proven, and I feel like the Knicks, one of their biggest problems is that they lack that discipline. So I can't imagine him getting that kind of a loving reception from anywhere. The only outlier, and this does make a lot of sense, is you know, sometimes guys don't want to be coddled. Sometimes they grow up, and if he grows up and is like, I don't want to be coddled, and Kobe Bryant comes to him and says, do you want to be great? Because Carmelo Anthony will respond a lot differently to a talk from Kobe Bryant than Dwight Howard did.
Oh, sure. I just think that it's – well, one, you said, you know, Kobe doesn't even have the keys to the franchise. He's going to have a statue, but he doesn't have the keys. And I immediately thought, If I was like a Kobe Bryant, or I was Magic Johnson, or I was LeBron James, I was some like all-time amazing talent who's going to just set the record books on fire, I wouldn't want a statue. I would say the next arena has to be a reconstruction of my head. I want people walking into my mouth. That's where I want the entrance.
Will someone please Photoshop this?
That's what I would say. If we have any engineers who are who listen to the podcast, I would love a mock-up of Carmelo Anthony as Madison Square Garden. But that's neither here nor there. But that's what popped into my head. Second, I just don't know that – I don't know that there has to be some big reaction to this news, in the sense that he says he wants to be a free agent. It can be a business decision. It could mean he wants to just be courted. It could mean he wants to just, you know, resign, or he wants to have his options open, or whatever. Like, whatever it means, it's a year from now. And while it's important, I don't know that every little word becomes like this secret code. Like, we immediately start dissecting, like, what does this mean? What does this mean? It might just mean he wants to be a free agent. It might not mean anything outside of that.
Yeah. So here, I guess here's a great question, and you and I talk a lot about how the media handles this stuff, because I think it interests us to a certain degree.
It impacts us.
Right. If we don't cover it, if we act like this is not a big deal, we think he's going to stay, is not a huge deal, let's not talk about it, and then he leaves, you could take two options on it. You can say, one, you could say, well, you know, you genuinely thought that, and you were wrong, and that's okay.
Yeah.
The other approach there is, you know, it's your job to pursue these possibilities and to keep an open mind and to have the reader prepared. Like, that's our job, is to give people, like, the inside track. Like, that's
oh,
a lot
for
of
sure.
What we
do. Yeah, and I'm not saying to not report it, and I'm not saying not to cover it. I just think that there's this instant need to figure out what is going to happen 10 months from now based on words he said in, what, September?
Yeah.
And I just think, like, I think that you can say, here's what he said, these are the possibilities, and then that can just be it. And then when he says something else, you go through that. I don't know that it just has to be like this, you know, this is a secret code. Like, for crying out loud, Kevin Love tweets or Instagram's a photo of a watch that he was given as a gift. And it's this amazing, nice gold watch. And he's like set it on Jerry West's book. And people start freaking out that he's trying to tell us he's going to the Lakers. Like, he wants to be a Laker. It's like, really? It's possible he just read that book and had it lying around. And that's what I'm talking about more. It's like this, we're all private investigators trying to figure out what Carmelo Anthony might not even know what he wants right now. And maybe that's the story. I don't know. But, like, I just know that, like, he said those comments. They seem like very basic comments to me that are newsworthy, you know, should be noted, should be jotted down and discussed a little bit. But I just don't know that they need to be dissected like it's the Zapruder film, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I can sympathize with that. I think it's – to me, there's a point where – you have to keep an eye out for what's developing.
Sure. Oh, absolutely.
And then I'll put it this way. I personally tend to do it a little bit more because I look back and go, I should have seen the decision coming. I do that a lot where I'm like, I really should have seen that coming. Howard is another one where I'm like, I really should have seen this coming.
Yeah.
There were little signs along the way. And the question then is, yeah, but who does it matter if you saw it coming or not? And that's like an interesting question to me. Is
yeah, that actually is, because I don't really know, you know, like, I don't have an opinion on that one way or another. It's like, should it matter, should, like, is it good to know one way or the other? Like, you could convince me of both sides.
Yeah. So anyway, Knicks fans will, I think Knicks fans, though, are, it's interesting to see Knicks fans are turning into the small market teams where they're like, this is just ridiculous ESPN posturing to try and to make a story out of nothing. He's not going anywhere.
This is just them pumping up the Lakers' possibility.
Yeah, and that always cracks me up, because even the Lakers do the same thing. Lakers fans are like, the ESPN is just trying to make a story out of the possibility of Dwight leaving. Really? Really? Is that what you think?
I hope he stays. I like him in New York.
This provides for end. I don't. The Knicks can't get good. This is my thing. I don't want the Knicks to get really to be a top of the line organization. This is much more entertaining. It's much more fun to write about them when they're like this, and they're still highly competitive.
Right.
I went all over the map on how many wins. I started doing. We'll talk about this in a little bit, but I started doing win projections for next year, using a very scientific method of basically picking them out of a hat, and I was all over the map with revisions. I went above and below 50 a bunch of times, and that's going to be a real interesting question on Tuesday. Plug for our NBA over-unders discussion.
Look ahead.
Yeah, a little look ahead. You know who's not looking ahead? LeBron James.
No. Well, is he?
Or looking behind?
Maybe he's not looking behind. Maybe he's not looking to the side because he's got great peripheral vision.
Right. I don't know. So LeBron, a poll came out, the players poll came out, and it basically said that if they have one shot to give, they're going to give it to Kobe Bryant or somebody else and not LeBron James.
Yeah, it was if you have LeBron, Kobe, and Michael Jordan on the floor together, who's taking the last shot? I feel like you don't need a last shot if you have those three guys on one team. If you're in a tight game with Kobe, Michael and LeBron on the same team, something went horribly wrong. The situation doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
I mean, the clutch conversation, it's weird because we started talking about this. You and I haven't probably ever had the clutch conversation because you and I were talking clutch like 2 years ago.
Right.
Like, all of us in this little blogosphere have been talking about clutch for so long, I don't have anything left to talk about with it. I just know that I keep going back to the Nuggets play. I tweeted out this morning on the EOB account. Last year, he drove LeBron James, took the ball at the top of the key, closing seconds. Great game against the Nuggets. That was a fantastic game in Miami. It's really an underrated game from last season. Drives into the teeth of the defense. He's going left, and he does a side kick out to Allen. Fareed has shrugged off, tries to recover, winds up giving a four-point play, game-winning play. It was a game-winning assist. And you've got Ray Allen in the corner, and there's a point where I do this a lot where I've asked so many coaches about this, and I need to ask Shaw about his thoughts on it, about the idea of why do you need to go isolation for a game-winner? And some coaches – I've got two different answers. Some coaches say because you need to put the ball in your best player's hand, and it limits your turnovers. Those are the two things that they say most consistently. They don't want to have to worry about play execution in the most important possession of the game, in the deciding possession. The other half say, I don't really know. I got that from a bunch of coaches last year. I said, why do you do that? They're like, you know, I don't really know. And this is coaches that do it all the time. And they're like, you know, I don't really know. We just kind of do that. Which is a pretty amazing, I thought, you know, kind of idea, because even like George Karl said that. He's like, I don't really know. It's just something that we do. He said he did mention the best player thing, but he's also like, we don't have a best player, so it just kind of depends on what I feel like. And I'm always like, why, you know, you're a team that's entirely based off of getting the right shot by your team execution. Why would you not rely on that? It's one thing that I've really come to appreciate about LeBron is that guy, he wants to make the right decision. He doesn't want to make the play. He wants to, ironically, make the decision.
Right. I mean, me personally, I'd take Larry Bird over those guys. That's just, yeah. I feel like it's just a personal choice. Like, if you pick, and this is kind of what I wrote in the post last night, like, you pick Michael, there's nothing wrong with that. You pick Kobe, there's nothing wrong with that. You pick LeBron, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, you're talking about all-time great players, right? The greatest player of all time, and then two guys who are constantly compared to the two greatest, or to the greatest player of all time.
Right.
Like, there's so many options. You go with them, you can go with Larry Bird, you can go with Ray Allen, like, you can go with a dozen guys.
Can I suggest Stephen Curry? Because he can just shoot from, like, 50 feet out.
I would just run a play to have him pull up from 40. But, like, you could have, like, one of the, arguably, and I know I've just been salivating and drooling over this play, but arguably the greatest clutch shot of all time was Ray Allen's three in the corner this year. Like, I would take him over. I would consider taking him over those guys. Like, it just depends on the shot. It depends on, I guess, situation. And it just depends on your comfort level. If you don't feel comfortable with LeBron taking the last shot, that's fine. Kobe Bryant's really good at it. I know the number, like, there. Kobe Bryant may not be the best in terms of numbers, but he's hit enough game winners to where I think, like, choosing him is fine. It's a great selection. Michael Jordan apparently is, like, a 50% shooter on those situations. So, yeah, go for it. He's great in it. Like, I would take any of those guys.
You know what's interesting? I just thought of this. Something we'll probably talk about. Who's the clutch guy on the Spurs?
Well, it used to be Ginobili, right?
It used to be Ginobili, but even then, I can't.
Parker's really good at it now.
He is. Yeah. No, all these guys are really great, and they can. But one of the reasons I think that, like, there's Ori, historically, right? Ori's got a few shots in their history. But when I think back on the Spurs, I don't think of a lot of clutch shots. You know why? They don't wind up in positions where they need them.
Right. That was one thing where, like, LeBron did say something along the lines of, I don't like it to get to that point. Like, I like to put away a team earlier than that. Yeah. Which is, hey, that's not a bad idea.
I love that idea. Like, I'd rather win by 13.
Yeah, it's not as dramatic, but hey, it's still a win. But there are some teams that just, like, it's like they didn't have any clutch moments. Like, well, maybe they didn't need any.
I might actually agree with you on Bird.
Larry Bird is arguably the greatest shooter of all time. He was so good at it that he played a half left-handed in a regular season game and scored 27 points. Like, Larry Bird is unreal. He's a great clutch shooter. You know, he would be my pick. I don't care. Like, you could go ahead and take Jordan. I think we'll have a fun time.
I might go with Jordan just because I've always described it this way. I always felt like it was less about Jordan's jump shot form and more about the impossible will that he possessed actually made that ball go in. I really believe that he was slightly telekinetic.
It honestly would not shock me. He was that good.
And it's strange because, I mean, I was never a Jordan guy, and you have to, like, this came from a lot of thought on the subject. It's just, and I do think it's interesting as I get older because Jordan becomes actually bigger in my mind as I get older, and so I'm starting to understand where so many columnists' annoying subject, like, takes on things come from, where they're like, he doesn't even compare to this player that I saw play. And now I'm like, well, no, if I really think about it, Kobe and LeBron are – it's what's crazy is because we're so defensive of our positions that we want to make this huge gap between them. Like, they're not even close to what Jordan was. It's like, no, all these guys are really good at basketball. And yeah. There's
historically,
and
really, so.
There's only so good you can be at it. That's what I think is kind of funny, is it's like you can only be so good at it.
Yeah, there is a limit. Like, I don't know that you can definitively say this is the limit, but my God, you look at what these guys have done over their careers and the longevity of their careers, it's like, how? How did you do that?
Like, show me a guy that shot 90% as a jump shooter his entire career. Then maybe we can start talking about it.
The only guy I can think of is Allen Houston, because I swear I never saw him miss a shot.
You know who's also not missing shots right now?
Derrick Rose.
Man, we're on fire with these trades.
Oh, my God. Yeah, he was 22 points last night, I think, in 22 minutes. He was, like, 6 of 10 from the field, 9 of 10 from the line. Had a few assists, 3 assists, I think. And the explosiveness is not only there, but he says he's more explosive now than he was before.
So let's have a completely rational and fair conversation about totally rewriting expectations from him based off of 3 preseason games.
Yeah.
I was low on the Bulls last year. I looked back and I actually had them as the 8th seed, and you were like, you're crazy. They're going to be way better than that. They were way better than that. I think you had them – yeah, you had them high, but I don't remember how high you had them.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I had them in the 4-5 range maybe.
Yeah, I think it was one of those where you thought that they would be slightly better than they were, and I thought they would be a lot worse than they were.
Yeah, the thing that screwed me up is I thought Boston was still going to be good.
Yeah. I think I finally – the other night, I finally got past a mental block on it because I really don't like watching the Bulls play offense. It makes me crazy. They have a really sluggish, hard-to-watch offense. I mean, a lot of last year was Nate Robinson running around. Their offensive efficiency numbers are pretty decent. To me, a lot of that's because they just kill with offensive rebounding. Like, they get a lot of putbacks, and yes, those mess with their possession stats, but I feel like that's a lot of what they do is it's ugly, but they manage to find ways.
Yep.
Similar to the fact that the Thunder actually had the best offense in terms of offensive efficiency last year. But if you ask me what's a better offense, the Thunder or the Spurs, I feel very confident in saying the Spurs. The Thunder are very good, but the Spurs have a better execution level.
I agree with that.
However, we finally, I think, have enough. Even without Rose last year, I feel like we have enough of a sample size, because I realized, I was like, the Bulls, I averaged out their what their winning percentage would have been in 2011. In 2011, 2012, in the lockout year. And it came out at 62 wins after they won 62 wins the year before.
Yeah.
So Rose and Thibodeau in 2 years together won 124 games.
That's not bad.
It's pretty good.
That's not bad at all.
And so if this is where Rose is at, I'm really high on the Bulls now. I'm getting a little unrealistically high on the Bulls. With this offense especially, I'm looking at Jimmy Butler, who's got a bruised knee right now, but he's going to be okay. Boozer's still very productive. Noah's finally going to be better with his plantar fasciitis. Luol Deng has turned into such a good offensive weapon after so many years of kind of struggling with it. They've got shooters in Mike Dunleavy. They've got inside guys. Taj Gibson's nailing his short-range jumper, which is a huge weapon for them. How good can Derrick Rose be, and subsequently, how good can the Bulls be?
I mean, they've proven they are, you know, one of the best regular season teams. And I'm not trying to knock them and say they can't win the playoffs. I'm just saying, if we're talking about the regular season, you know, them winning the first, you know, the one seed in the East is not inconceivable, even as good as Miami is. Even with Miami winning 66 games last year, you know, they've got three straight years of going to the finals. You know, I would expect a little bit of a drop off from them, and that opens up the window for Chicago. Like, Chicago being a 60-win team is not crazy, right? Them being a 62-63 win team is not crazy, and assuming health to most of their guys, most of their key guys, why can't they be the number one seed? Now, I'll still pick Miami, I think, but I was locked in at the Pacers as the second seed for a long time. Over the last 2 months, and now I'll say I'm probably going to go with Chicago as the 2 seed, just based on, you know, 18 months off, Rose looks really, really good. He looks back. He looks confident. And that's the thing. That was the thing about comments last night. He was talking about being able to go inside and absorb contact and finish and not worry about his knee. And the physical part of it is obviously very important, but the mental part of it, if he's already not worried about that, and he was going against some big guys last night with Andre Drummond, with Greg Monroe, with Josh Smith, like, he was going into the paint and scoring. If he's not worried about going against those guys, even if it's preseason, I really like the way he looks, and I think it's okay to react to these preseason games.
For me, I think there are two huge questions. One is, he wore himself down so bad from 2011 into 2012 before the ACL. Everyone kind of forgets this. He missed a ton of games that year.
Oh, yeah.
Because his play style, it was kind of funny. The big knock on him for years was he can't finish through contact and he can't draw fouls. And then he learned how to do that, and it beat the crap out of him.
He didn't just learn how to do it. He learned how to do it while flashing two blazing middle fingers at everybody.
Yeah, and he was so good at it. But the problem is, and Wade learned this, I wish that they had a better relationship, honestly. I've been given no indication that they have a good relationship. Derek has very much always been like, I'm my own dude. I wish Wade would kind of reach out to him as a fellow Chicago guy and be like, here's where I was when I was your age. You cannot do this to yourself. And he's talked about, I've got to shoot more jumpers. I've got to take care of my body more. I've got to rest. I've got to do all these things. But saying it and thinking it and actually getting yourself to do it in the game is much different, because he's really got to protect himself. Now, that doesn't mean he's never driving. It's just a matter of, you do have to. This is, I think, the hardest thing for Rose and the Bulls. They got to pull back on the accelerator.
It is learning how, I mean, and that's what we talk about with these veteran teams and teams that have these title aspirations, is they pace themselves so well. Like, yeah, there were plenty of times over the last few years where we thought the Celtics were just dying, right? but it then they would kind of turn it on, they'd be ready, and once the playoffs came, they were pretty much fine. And you know, you could call it bad play or inconsistent play, but it might just be pacing themselves. The Spurs pace themselves. I think the Heat learned how to pace themselves while still finding a way to win 27 games in a row, which sounds weird. Like the Lakers for years when they had Shaq and Kobe, and even when the Kobe-Powell combination, like they paced themselves in the regular season. And the Bulls, their relentless style is fantastic. It's what makes them so great. But they have to pace themselves. They have to find a way to find that balance. Otherwise, you know, you can have all the talent and the defensive, you know, acumen and whatever you need to throw at them to win a title. But if you are worn down from a grueling regular season in which you push yourself a little too hard, I'm not saying throw games, but there are times where, all right, we're up 9 with five, you know, with 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Let's leave our second unit out there a little bit and see if they can maintain this lead instead of just throwing the starters back in. Like there's certain minute management techniques that, you know, Thibodeau just has to find a way to employ.
And I mean, he said a lot of positive things about that this year. I'm hoping he does. I'm hoping he understands. Like I feel like, and this I think is happening with a lot of teams in their early, when they're becoming a contender, they want to win as many games as possible. They want to. Oh, they sure. Really want to. They want to make a statement.
They want home court. They want, you know, that the they want to be the number one seed. They want, you know, they want that kind of status, which is, you know, it helps.
And they want to see how good they are. I think that's a lot of it. They want to see how good are we. At this point, the Bulls need to be like, even though they've added a lot of new parts, I really feel like the Bulls need to be like, we know we can win the playoffs. We can go on the road in a playoff series and win. We know that we can do this. So if we know that going in, let's peel back a little bit. Now, I don't think that they will, which leads us into our next discussion, but that, I think, is got to be a huge part of it. And it's weird to say just because it's not about Rose's necessarily his knee or anything. It's just about – it's about looking out for the best perspective long term. Before we move on to the next subject, I wanted to ask you, how about this, in an intelligent, non-morning show way.
Oh, so we're gonna try to deviate from what we usually do.
Right. Yeah, we're changing it up, trying to be intelligent. Nope, can't do it. I'll just go ahead and go the morning round. Our MVP talks unrealistic for Rose.
Oh no, not at all. Because, I mean, one, he'll be good enough, most, I believe he'll be good enough to warrant that kind of consideration, because that's what he's shown in the past. He's an MVP-type player. He's won an MVP. He's competed for others. Like, I think he'll be that type of guy, assuming he's healthy. Also, you know, LeBron's won a couple now in a row. He's won, what, 4 or 5 or what at 4?
Voter fatigue.
Yeah, there's a little bit of voter fatigue. I actually think that, you know, Kevin Durant is probably your best bet, just because I think people want to give it to him. He's so good. I think there is this worry. It's the Charles Barkley, it's the Karl Malone thing, where this guy, you can tell, is an all-time great, and you don't want him to get lost in the LeBron era, like guys got lost in the Michael Jordan era. And not saying Kevin Durant wouldn't deserve it if he played like himself this year and ended up with the MVP award, but there is a little bit of like, oh, what else do we have? What else have we got to throw at everybody? Like, I think there is something there. But Derrick Rose being in consideration for MVP, that would not shock me at all. In fact, I expect it.
I think there's two things, and I'm doing a post tomorrow, actually, plug, on looking at the odds, breaking down the odds for different races, including Rookie of the Year and the MVP. And with LeBron, I think that there's one interesting aspect of the voting process. Everyone's talking about voter fatigue so much, I honestly think it's become too aware for it to happen. I think that there's a legitimate chance
possibly.
That won't occur. The other element I think that might be in play is he has done what everyone asked him to, and I think there's a real part on – there's a real feeling from not only the public but the media and the voters specifically of – we killed you for your failures. You have lived up to everything. We owe it to you to reward you. And I think that there is a legitimate thing of, we need to make sure that history reflects how good this guy has been.
Oh, sure.
Because putting him at that, you know, I said the other day, I was amazed I get to cover the NBA during a time when a guy's won 4 MVPs. You know, there've been other guys that have done that. 9 other players have won at least 4 in NBA and NBA history. Somebody pointed out to me the other day. but the list that once you get to five goes way, way down. I think that there's a legitimate chance. I think Durant's going to suffer from – I think Durant, honestly, he missed kind of his window for a little while because of the fact I think they're going to punish him for – there's a lot of angst from people about the James Harden trade.
Sure.
And I think people are going to punish him for Sam Presti's decision to trade James Harden, which is unbelievably stupid. If he just barely missed it because of Carmelo having a run last year, and I had to kind of stay true to what I said, even though he scored the most points per game is what everyone uses.
Right.
If Durant had managed to edge out Melo, if Melo hadn't had that crazy April and he'd held on and had finished as leading the league in scoring at 50-40-90, I would have said my baseline awards that he should split the award with LeBron. I really probably would have, because that to me remains – that's such a crazy – it's everyone says it's just stats, but you got to understand what level that is. And the players respect that 180 number a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I really want him to hit it. I badly want him to lead the league. I want to say that I cover the league when a guy led the league in scoring at 50-40-90, because no one's ever done it. So.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to miss that window, just like I missed the window of covering the league when Ricky Davis was playing. Like, you want to have those all-time moments.
Yeah, you look back, you're filled with second red. So I mentioned earlier that we started going through our process of looking at how many games teams are going to win next year in advance for today's huge over-under podcast, which you want to do like an Eastern Conference and a Western Conference version?
Oh, yeah. We should break it up.
That one's going to take us a while. We need to probably break it up. We don't have a three-hour podcast on their iPods or iPods. Who uses an iPod anymore? I'm having a lot of trouble with the top of the East and the bottom of the West playoff picture.
Yeah, last couple of years when I've done predictions for places, including our own CBSSports.com, how could you put this team in the West second, like, and this other team sixth? Like, why? Like, how could you be so stupid? And to me, it's like, look at the win totals. They're like, I'm predicting a difference of two win totals. It's just that's how good it is at the top of the West. Is that we, you know, you could. Tell me that anyone is going to finish 1 through 5 or 1 through 6 in any order, and I'd be like, yeah, that sounds right. And that's where we've gotten in the East. I mean, I really feel like, you know, I'm still going to – I don't – like we talked about, like I think the Bulls can be the one seed. I'll probably still pick the Heat. But you could tell me regular season 2 through 5, this is the order of the Bulls, Pacers, Knicks, and Nets in any order, and I'd be like, yeah, that probably works. Like it's just that – it's become that good – in the East, at least at the top, and then the bottom of the West, I really have no idea what to do.
The 98 Bulls won 62.
Yeah.
Isn't it possible that they were coasting and won 62?
Oh, yeah.
So if they were coasting in 162 in an easier league, this is how I've kind of rationalized. I'm moving towards – Mike Prada did the same model when he did his predictions of SB Nation. It's the idea that the Heat are going to win fewer games because they're going to coast because they no longer have the need to really do it. That 27-game win streak of theirs actually – it was really – they would have started coasting a lot earlier. But that win streak, they were like, well, no, let's make a run at it.
They're like, hey, this is fun. We're at 15. Let's do it.
Yeah, let's just keep going. Like it's really hard to be like, well, we won 25. Okay, that's enough. You know, if we just win 8 more – It changes things, and so I think that they're not going to have that this year because it's just very hard to do. And so I think they'll probably coast, and I still, after some revisions, I tentatively have them at 60. This could change a lot more between now and Tuesday, so definitely tune in on Tuesday to hear how much I've thrown myself into psychosis over trying to figure out how many games the Miami Heat are going to win because I'm an idiot. But I think that there's a chance that they coast a little bit. And then the Pacers, I'm thinking, might be one of those teams that we know is better than their record, and they just don't win that many regular season games.
Yeah, and they've got new parts and everything. They might have another slow start. They might just be a slow starting team. And then second half of the season, they kill it.
The Nets have a lot to prove, so I think the Nets are going to win a lot of games.
Yeah, and they're just, I mean, they just have a lot of talent. I think they will have a very incredible regular season.
Yeah.
I I believe in the Knicks. I think that they can be right there with those guys in the regular season because their style is so hard to deal with on a random night in January, February, whatever. Whereas if you're obviously a good team who has made the playoffs, like the Pacers last year, and you have a defense that matches what they do, you can game plan over a seven-game series and just take away everything they do. But random nights here and there during the regular season, back-to-backs, four games and five nights, all that, the Knicks are really annoying to play because of their style.
Yeah. Like I said, this is really tough. I told you this last night on Campfire. When I started doing, when I did my first run, I just was like instinctively, how many games do they win? Here. I was 95 wins over the possible number.
Such an optimist.
Now, part of that was I think I accidentally put the Bucks at like 55. I think I typoed that.
You're like, whoops, so, I'm at five.
Yeah. So they've gone down quite a bit. But overall, even when I took them out, I was still at like 35 wins plus. So I had to start chopping off numbers. And there's so many teams. I have one, two, three, four. I have five teams winning over 55 wins right now.
That's a lot. But realistic.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to look up last year's, but I feel like there was a lot. I mean, you talked about how close these things are. Think about the 3, 4, and 5 in the West. That was one game.
Yeah.
The 3, 4, and 5 in the West.
That's the thing. Like, it's not insulting to say someone's the fifth seed in the West. It's just
I think
not.
I'm actually going to – I'm not going to do a post on it, but I'm just going to – I do this sometimes. I'm going to upload a text file to my server on Paroxysm that just lists whenever somebody wants to talk to me about an objection with something I've done in these – is to be like, read this. And it's just going to have things like, remember, you know, this is really close. The win totals are more reflective of circumstance than anything else. And this isn't a huge insult to them. And I think the Heat are going to coast. And I think the Pacers are going to be a worse regular season team record-wise than they actually are, and these type of things. The bottom of the East is problematic for me, too. We talked about it a lot, about how it's going to be hard to choose. But now it's gotten even more complicated because we talked about Pistons, Cavs, Raptors, Wizards are kind of the four there at the bottom of the right. East. And now we've got injury issues to the Wizards and Cavaliers. The Pistons have their own set of things. You just don't know how that's going to hold.
Oh my God, they're fun to watch in so many wrong ways.
So many wrong ways.
I'm really excited for them this year.
And the Raptors may be the safest pick, but I feel like they have maybe the lowest ceiling, the lowest talent, and the highest propensity to blow it up and tank, because Ujiri is going to be looking for an excuse to do that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. Like, you can be the safest pick, but still have the lowest ceiling maybe of those teams.
I mean, honestly, if you're at 34 wins and you've made substantial strides, if you feel like you're actually a really good team, right?
Yeah.
Even if you're at – I'm trying to think. If you're on pace for 40, if you're on pace for 40 and you're Masai Ujiri, do you look at that situation and go, yeah, we should definitely push for this? They won 34 games last year. Let's say that they're on pace for 38 in February. If they win out at their current rate, they're going to be at about 38 wins, which might be good enough to get you into the eighth.
Yeah, it probably will be.
Do you really feel like this core is moving to where the next year it's going to be so much better, it's going to jump to 6 or 5 or 4? Or do you look at it as, we have some things here, but we obviously don't have enough. I don't want to get stuck in purgatory. I'm not going down this road. I want the lottery pick.
I mean, I guess there's the chance of winning the lottery, right? I don't know that anybody under the ninth highest probability has won the lotto.
Right.
Well, I guess maybe that's just number one pick. I don't know if top three. But it's just not –
gotta happen sometime, right? That's how statistics work.
Right, exactly. But that's not like a regular thing to kind of hope for. So I think you start wondering, all right, how much is Jonas Valanciunas going to benefit? Because he's clearly got to be a part of their future, right?
Yeah, he does.
I mean, he has to be. Whether you think he's going to be great or not, like that guy's going to be the man in the middle for them.
I've got him on my breakout centers list, which you can read on – CBSSports.com today.
Yeah, and I've got a post on Anthony Davis, which is relevant to what you just said. But like, I think that there is value where you start thinking, all right, is there a big difference between the 11th pick in the draft and the 15th pick? You know, is there that big of a gap to where the playoff experience for even if Valanciunas is the only guy on this roster who has, you know, a future with this franchise? Like, let's say they want to clear house on everybody else and just keep him around and then bring in new guys. Is that experience worth four fewer spots on, you know, in the draft? I kind of think it is.
I think it depends on what they look like, because I think for Ujiri, the problem is if you wind up in that eighth seed, it's really hard to go from the eighth seed to the fifth. That it's exceptionally difficult.
Oh, sure. Especially the way the East is set up the next couple of years.
And if you wanted to know the last team I can remember that really kind of did it, it's the Atlanta Hawks. And part of it is I look at Tim Leiwicki, who took over at Maple Leaf Sports, and Masai Ujiri, and I ask myself, are those guys that are going to want to be the Hawks? Uh-uh. Like, those guys know how this league works. They know what success for. They watch the, you know, Leiwicki watched the Lakers, and he's obviously going to know that this isn't the Lakers, but he knows that the only way is to set the bar extremely high. And yeah, it would be great for Valanciunas, but Valanciunas is a superb talent. Again, I got him on my breakout thing. I think he's going to be really good this year.
Yeah.
I've been too low on him and have readjusted my expectations. But he's not a guy that you're like, no matter, like, everything, as long as we make him better, everything's going to be okay. It's like, well, no, we need to get as much talent as we can. I think also it's a matter of if you're able to trade for a young talent that could be really great as a complimentary piece, and you increase the odds, especially if you're able to pull a trade – some sort of trade where you get another draft pick. I mean, that's part of my question is, thinking long term, if an offer comes along of Rudy Gay and certain other packages for a first round pick, and you're able to put multiple picks together to move up in this draft, isn't that worth it?
Oh God, if you can get a first round pick for Rudy Gay, period, you do it. And that's not necessarily a knock on him. It's just you don't have a core going forward that you're like, yep, this is who we got. This is who we're rolling with. Like, there are questions with, you know, almost everybody on that roster and whether or not they should be a part of the core moving forward. And I think, like, what just popped in my head, because if they're going to do kind of like the, we should probably avoid the playoffs and just go for a draft pick, well, that's probably going to be a decision they have to make around the trade deadline, right? Like, not on pace for 40 wins, but like when they're around 25, 26 wins. And yeah. So I have a hard time, like, you've got to go over Rich Cho's head. But I got a hard time thinking, like, if Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is not good in the first couple months, and not as just like, oh, he hasn't reached his potential yet, but just doesn't look good, can't shoot, can't hit a shot, isn't making a huge impact on the game, or even a marginal impact on the game, I got a hard time believing you can't go to Michael Jordan and say, like, I got Rudy Gay for you, this young guy you've got isn't working out, we don't even need to exchange picks, what do you think, let's get something going.
Then, I'm freaking out right now.
I mean, the Bobcats just went with, like, all right, we'll give Al Jefferson money. We're going to spend a little money, show that we're, you know, competitive, blah, blah, blah. That doesn't seem like a crazy move to me. At least, like, in terms of how realistic it could be.
I can't believe – the reason I say I can't believe this, I'm freaking out right now, I literally have been doing a Bobcats Gay trade machine this week. I'm not kidding. I found one that works.
But doesn't that make sense?
I found one that works that involves Jeff Taylor. Jeff Taylor, Bismack Biyombo, Ben Gordon. The question is going to be who gets picks. But there's a framework you can find in that construct that actually works, and it gives both teams what they want.
I've written it multiple times. I'm fine with the Raptors rolling through to Gay. I think it's a fine move. I'm not one of the guys that freaked out about him last year. Like, I think it's okay to make that decision.
What are you trying to say?
Well, I wasn't even thinking about you there, but, like, yeah, you definitely fit into that little shot I took. Oh, you were collateral damage. I didn't even mean to do that. That's a fine decision, but he's also a guy where if you're a Raptors fan and you can get expirings, young talent, and let's not even throw in the draft pick. You can get that and have flexibility moving forward for that franchise, for Masai Ujiri to work with. I think you feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, I think from the Bobcats' perspective, if you're looking at it and you're saying they have multiple draft picks this year, or at least the next couple of years anyway, I've actually been really impressed because I looked at it and was like, wait, if they're bad enough this year, they could wind up keeping their own pick and not giving it to the Bulls. They could wind up having the Pistons and having the Blazers. I got that from Cardboard Gerald's Ben Swanson's. Is it Ben Swanson? Is that his name?
Yeah.
Cardboard Gerald. I forget his last name. That's Ben. Ben's preview on SB Nation was talking about how they could have three draft picks in this next class. I'm like, if you got Rudy Gay, Al Jefferson, and three draft picks, holy crap.
Yeah, you could do some things.
I think the Raptors are a really interesting question. That's going to be a tough one. The bottom of the West is giving me a lot of problems too. We'll talk about this more on Tuesday and maybe Monday a little bit. Your Wolves are giving me fits too.
They're giving me fits as well.
You get nervous?
I'm not nervous. I just like I don't expect playoffs. I think there's a good possibility of it, but it's not like if they miss the playoffs this year, I'm gonna be like, oh god, I'm heartbroken. Like, it's too muddled in the back end of the West to really know for sure.
Isn't that a downgrade from last year though? I mean, we expected them to be a playoff team last year. Do you feel like there's been kind of a downgrade?
I think it's just a sidestep, really. I mean, we expected certain things of them offensively that didn't have a chance to show because Kevin Love really was. I mean, he played 18 games, but he really wasn't there. Like, he just wasn't. Like, that wasn't Kevin Love on the court. And they had, you know, obviously the shooting problems, which were probably stemmed from the fact that Chase Budinger weren't out there for 75 games and healthy. And so I think we had these things of like, oh, can they defend? You know, they're gonna score. Well, they didn't score and they could defend. And this year it's again, you know, we know they're gonna score, can they defend? But I think that's actually gonna be the case. And so I didn't expect them to make the playoffs last year. I'm not saying it's a lock this year, but the defensive concerns are gonna be there this year. Like Adelman seems a little nervous about that. And I think that's why he seems rattled about them not executing on offense, because he knows they have to execute on offense to be good, because the defense is going to be inconsistent.
It's going to be tough. It's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to this podcast next week. Do you have a guest for Friday?
Secret guest. Still pegging it down, but as of right now, it should be a good one.
Good. I've got odds on handicapping the awards race for tomorrow. I've got a remarkably stupid set of posts on Sunday that involve REM and U2. Oh. Like those bands? I'm going full on, like 30-year-old white guy with these posts.
Oh, screw this! I'm doing a breakdown of the Saint. If you get to do those, I'm definitely doing a breakdown of the Saint.
What else have we got going on? Next week we start ramping up for the season in earnest. We've only got, man, we're inside 2 weeks.
We are.
Inside 2 weeks.
We're so close that you and I are trying to figure out how to have our respective getting in trouble with both the job and our respective others.
a tradition unlike any other.
Exactly. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.